This is Age of Treason Radio. On the White Network.
And Daddy always smiled, took me by the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never mother stone. You better learn your past, you better learn young, for someday it never comes.
With your host, Tan Stoffel.
The title of this installment is Media, Identity, and the Boston Bombing, Part 2. I'll pick up where I left off last time, but I want to introduce this by pointing out that I'm talking about identity and the media and how the two go together. I talked about media last time, and what I didn't mention was its necessity in defining the collective dreams, nightmares, the heroes, the goats, the vision, the shared vision and values of a people that subscribe to it, that engage in that media. And that's why it's necessary. White people need a media to help us communicate with each other, to form a positive vision for who we are, and to pursue our best interests. And we don't have that at the moment, or what we have is very poor, very small, and the collective media that everybody else shares, including whites, is very anti-white, and that's one of the things that's come out of this Boston bombing. My analysis of the mainstream media is that on the one side you've got it actively anti-white Jews. People who are pro-Jewish and have a Jewish identity. And on the other side are people who aren't willing to even defend whites. So let me, I was naming names and citing some examples of this. And I was in the middle of talking about David Sirota. Sirota recommended another author who occasionally posts on Salon named Andrew O'Hetir. I'm not even sure how you pronounce his name, but it's got an O apostrophe as if he's Irish or Scottish. But he looks very Jewish, and he thinks very Jewish thoughts. So I'm going to assume that he's at least half Jewish, if not entirely Jewish. But Sirota really liked an article of O'Hetir's titled, "The Boston Backlash is Rooted in America's Paranoid Past." And in this article, O'Hetir it goes back to 1901, the assassination of President William McKinley by a alien named Leon Czolgosz. Very strange spelling. I had to actually look up how to pronounce that name. I'm not sure I'm doing it justice, but he draws this parallel, this author, O'Hetir, that the same sort of situation played out then, that people were very upset, Americans were very upset by this immigrant assassinating their president, and that this was bad for immigrants then. But he says a couple of interesting things. He points out that how in McKinley's time, it was a nation of 76 million people, and it was dominated by an Anglo-Saxon Protestant elite, in which only a handful of non-whites and women were even permitted to vote. And he points out that this has little in common with the America of Barack Obama, but he does see a common thread. He sees this nativist paranoia, he calls it, about alien ideologies and alien religions being strikingly familiar. And Sirota, approving of this, actually, he described it, he summarized it as the eerie way that the history of violence repeats itself. And my comment to that was the eerie repeating pattern is of Jews siding with and sympathizing with the immigrants, the aliens, the other, while pathologizing and demonizing whites for even recognizing that there are others. You know, that's the point I made about Joan Walsh the last time was, and it's true of Sirota and O'Hare and Tim Wise, is in their minds, we're racists if we even recognize that there are others. Meanwhile, they're busy openly sympathizing. They not only recognize the others, but they openly side with those others against whites. So it's you know, talking about the dishonesty of this of the situation. That's yet another aspect of the dishonesty of it. They fault whites for, you know, imagining that there are distinctions between people, for discriminating between groups of people, discriminating anyone from themselves, having the audacity to say that someone isn't white. And yet the same people doing that pathologization and demonization of whites see very clearly themselves that there are distinctions. They distinguish themselves. And they would distinguish Jews from whites themselves, too, even while they're getting their panties in a bunch about white people doing it. So, let's see. His article, O'Hare's article, talks about the connection between Chokoz and Emma Goldman, who, as far as I know, he calls her a legendary Russian-born anarchist. Who was in America and was ultimately deported from America. But she's a Jewess. And he doesn't mention that. This is part of that crypsis, the hiding who they are, and another aspect of the dishonesty of the whole conversation about any of this stuff, the bombing or immigration or us and them identity, is that the Jews hide who's Jewish. You know, my question about whether this O'Hare guy is Jewish or not, why doesn't he explain that he's Jewish, that his father was Jewish or his mother was Jewish or they were both Jewish or whatever, and how that impacts his own identity and how he sees the world? Why doesn't Sirota do it? Why doesn't Joan Walsh volunteer that more openly that she married a Jewish man? She's divorced from now, I think, but she has children with him. So she has sympathies with the Jewish people because her kids are partly Jewish. Why doesn't she disclose that so that people can better judge what she has to say about white people? Why are they hiding it? Why do they hide it? Well, they hide it because they need to hide it, because they wouldn't be able to do what they do as easily as they do it if they talked openly about Jews being totally different from whites, being the polar opposites of whites. Jews are victims, whites are oppressors and victimizers. Instead, they talk about white privilege as if it's as if whites are in control of the media instead of Jews. So this guy O'Hare's point is that the real threat is not from the immigrants or from their the people who can understand them and their pain, feel their pain like he does and like Emma Goldman did. That the real danger is from the people within America, you know, from Americans. We're the only ones who can destroy America. And this is, again, the theme I mentioned the last time about this pretense that this personification of America as this unified collective, that they don't even believe their own nonsense. You know, out of one side of their mouth, they talk about diversity as our greatest strength, and they see that it's fractured, and they love the other side of the fracture, the non-white side. But then they, on the other side of their mouth, they spout this nonsense about a collective America that doesn't really exist. So one of the interesting things about O'Hare is he wrote back in February of 2012 an article titled "The Oscars: Old White Male Problem." So he's talking about one facet of the media, and a very Jewish facet of the media. And he even brings up the Jewish facet of it. And what's fascinating about this article of his is that the very title tells you it's got old white male problem. He sees a problem in the fact that the apparently the Academy, that does the Oscars, is in large part white. right? What he says, calls white. But he also recognizes, he says, I cannot deny being curious about the question of how Jewish the Academy is these days. And you might be able to construct a non-offensive argument for why that's relevant information. But it's information that ugly people would use for ugly reasons. So here's the double standard right in one article. It's usually hard to find the same Jew making an argument about Jews and then making the opposite argument about whites in different places. Here he's put it in one article. The fact that the Academy is white, that's okay. That's, you know, he doesn't consider that offensive to criticize. But when it comes to figuring out how many Jews there are, that's off limits. That would be bad. That's offensive. And it's not relevant, according to him, because it would be used for ugly reasons. So that's an interesting thing about him. Now, there was one more voice on the left that I could cite in the left-wing Jewish media, and that was Andrew Rosenthal, who is the head editor or the editorial page editor of the New York Times. And he wrote two, in the wake of the bombing, two articles, at least two that I recorded. One titled, What's the Difference Between McVeigh and Tsarnaev? And the money quote here was that the argument that we should treat Mr. Tsarnaev as an enemy combatant boils down to his religion and his ethnic origin. This is the kind of logic that led the United States to imprison Japanese Americans during World War II and to far worse acts of ethnically and racially motivated violence in other countries. Well, he doesn't specify what acts he's talking about, and I think he's bluffing there. But, you know, basically the thrust of his argument is that McVeigh was worse than Tsarnaev because McVeigh was white and a native. And it's really a logical extension of this idea that Muslims looking for a better life for themselves, alien Muslim immigrants, are better than white people. If they bomb, they're better as bombers. If they don't bomb, they're better than us for not bombing. It's, you know, it really doesn't matter whether they bomb or not. They're better than us, according to this Jew at the New York Times. The other article that he wrote 4 days later was titled The Boston Bombing and Immigration. And what he was upset about there was that some people had started to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, maybe we should reexamine this amnesty we're about to give to all of these illegal immigrants because of this, in the wake of this bombing. And the money quote in this article was, and when did the United States start excluding immigrants from dangerous places? Seems to me that they fall into the – he's talking about the Tsarnaevs. They fall into the categories of, quote, huddled masses yearning to breathe free, unquote, not to mention wretched refuse of teeming shores and the homeless tempest-tossed. He's referring there to this Emma Lazarus poem. Emma Lazarus was the Jewess about the turn of the century who got that poetry of hers, that doggerel, attached to the Statue of Liberty. And that this has become, you know, one Jewess writes this nonsense, another Jew gets it attached to the Statue of Liberty, and then here we've got this Jewish editor today citing it as if it's the constitutional law on immigration. And, you know, it's true that this has become, through the power of the Jewish media and Jewish propaganda, this has become the imagination, the vision of what America is, that it has to basically welcome anybody who wants to come here. To do anything else is racist, KKK, Nazi, bad, evil, stupid, crazy, and all the rest. You know, basically there are 6 to 7 billion people on the planet. They're all Americans. Most of them just don't have their papers yet. That's the attitude. So on the other side, I want to get to that too. I mentioned two names the last time. And then make some general comments about what all these people share. On the right-wing side, there was a woman named Mona Charon. Not sure exactly how you pronounce her name. Now, she's not a nobody. I had never heard her name before. But she's a columnist, a political analyst, has author of two best-selling books, both of them about liberals. And remember what I've said about this food fight aspect of this political theater that they set up. She's one of those people. She has perched herself on the right side, criticizing the liberals for things. Doesn't call them out as Jews, but she's pretty open about her being a Jew. She's more upfront about it, apparently, than David Sirota is, or Tim Wise is. But she also served as Jack Kemp's speechwriter during his 1988 presidential bid. So this is not a nobody. This is a person with political influence. And she wrote an article titled "The Hatred in the Heart of White America." And she wrote, "We Americans are not confused about the morality of what happened in Birmingham." She's talking about a bombing in 1963 that was blamed on the KKK. We're not confused about that morality, and not during the Jim Crow era in America generally. We do not hesitate to condemn utterly the behavior and the beliefs of the Ku Klux Klan, the perpetrators of this bombing and others, and their white supremacist fellow travelers. We do not worry that reviling white supremacists and their grotesque deeds will somehow taint all white people. Well, that taints all white people right there. This business about reviling and grotesque, condemn utterly. You know, I'd like to hear her say something like that about Jews. I don't care what she has to say, except that I wish that white people would see this as this woman is not your ally. She's not your friend. You may think of yourself as a conservative right winger who loves Jews and loves Israel. This woman doesn't love you back. She doesn't love your country. She doesn't love your people. As I said previously, these Jews on the right wing don't come to the defense of whites as whites. They may pose as white. They may claim that identity and get take umbrage if somebody says that they're not white, and talk about Jews as if they're white. But they don't identify in any meaningful, tangible way as white, as sympathizing with white people. And this woman is a good example of that. Now, she's concerned about terrorism. And what she says about the liberals on the other side is that they're obsessed not with terrorism, but with the color and ethnicity of the terrorists. And that's really a dumbed down, sort of deliberately looking the other way of putting it. As I said, this code of silence, that she doesn't analyze it, that the anti-white attitudes on the other side from the left-wing Jews media is Jewish in origin and wouldn't apply the same rhetoric about privilege to Jewish privilege that they apply to their critique to whites and white supposed white privilege. Now, the other voice on the in the right-wing media, I don't even think is right-wing. He doesn't even pretend to be right-wing, but the right-wing gives him a voice. And this is Charles Jacobs. Now, I hadn't heard of Charles Jacobs either, but I saw his video where he appeared on Fox News. And the title of that video page was Boston's Mosques and Radical Ties, Radical Islam, Connecting the Clues. Wake up, America! And this was on Fox News. This is what the title that they gave it. And it's a short segment with him talking about the links that the Tsarnaevs had to these mosques that had, you know, typical stuff that if you watched any of the discussion, well, maybe I'm projecting a bit here because I saw some of this in the wake of 9/11. And, you know, any time that you want, you can tune to at least one channel on TV, Fox News, where they'll be talking about Islamic terrorism and Muslims. And, you know, it's generally fact-based, you know, that these guys went to this such-and-such mosque, and at this mosque such-and-such other person is there, and such-and-such person has said this or that in the past. But, you know, basically that's their concern, is that they're worried about these Muslim immigrants. They put the white threat aside or give it less importance than the Muslim threat, which they consider a larger threat. And what's notable about this guy, Charles Jacobs, is it describes him in the About page on his website. He's actually heads this an organization. It seems like a small organization, but it's the name of the organization is Americans for Peace and Tolerance. And again, here's the pretense of this collective America. And his invocation of, you know, his goal is, or his mission is, peace and tolerance. And he actually describes his mission as being dedicated to promoting peaceful coexistence in an ethnically diverse America by educating the American public about the need for a moderate political leadership that supports tolerance and core American values in communities across the nation. Well, how do you have core American values when you have a diverse America? You don't. So this guy is just spewing nonsense. He's a leftist, basically. I mean, this is peace and tolerance nonsense. It's the same stuff you get from the Salon crowd, except they've moved beyond that now. They're not even pretending that they're about peace and tolerance. They're openly favoring the other, the alien, the immigrant, and opposed to whites. Now, this Charles Jacobs, even though it's a small organization, he claims that he was named by Forward, The Forward, which is a Jewish media publication, as one of America's top 50 Jewish leaders. And that he's led several other organizations. They're probably all still there, as I've pointed out before. Jews not only organized for their political best interests, but every Jew seems to belong to three or four organizations. If there's X million Jews in the world, there's 3X Jewish organizations pursuing Jewish interests. So this gives me a few minutes here now to talk about the common attributes of left-wing and right-wing Jews and how it's really just theater. It's not, and a difference in emphasis. As I've said before, the left-wing Jews are afraid of the white enemy and do everything that they can to defang us, to put us down, denigrate us, and pathologize and demonize us. Whereas the emphasis on the right wing is the Muslim threat, the Muslim enemy, and not so much the white. But they do agree on both of those enemies, and that's the nightmare that the Jewish media has and imparts to anybody who participates in it or even just listens to it, is a Jewish nightmare. It's these twin Jewish nightmares, these twin Jewish enemies. And you can see it even in the U.S. government when our presidents or representatives, elected officials give speeches, that these are the two enemies. On 9/11, I remember on the anniversary of 9/11, Obama talking about both, really. You know, they're extremists, and that's what us whites supposedly share with these alien Muslims. You know, it's from a Jewish point of view, we're a threat to the Jews. What they both do, both sides, is they gin up this dishonest rhetoric about America, an America that doesn't exist, that neither side really believes exists, although maybe the right wing, part of their appeal to right-leaning white people, is the fact that they wrap themselves in a message of patriotism, of strong defense, and that's the angle that they come at, while the other side is busy pathologizing that as racism and as discriminatory. The right-wing Jews are ginning it up. You know, they want that patriotism because they want it to serve the best interests of Israel and the defense of Jews, both in America and in Israel. And this guy, Charles Jacobs, you can see from perusing his site a little bit that it's really not about peace and tolerance at all. It's about, for him, even the ADL doesn't do a good enough job of defending Jewish interests in America. And he thinks they're too soft on Islamic terrorists. And so that's why he started his own organization to better pursue Jewish interests. America, to the extent, you know, America is not an entirely bogus idea. There was an America, and still is, a core. And this is exactly what the left-wing Jews hate, is it's a white Christian thing, a white Christian nation, this America of old, the old stock Americans, the original America. But it's in tatters now. It's been invaded. It's bankrupted. And it's demoralized. White people in America really don't have leaders. We don't have media. And most white people in America don't even think of themselves as white people. You know, they're busy thinking of themselves as rugged individuals, or as Democrats and Republicans, or left wing and right wing. We've been divided and conquered, really, infiltrated and manipulated. And the manipulation is done by these people, these Jews, who are hyper-conscious of identity and issues of identity. And not only hyper-conscious of their own identity, but hyper-conscious of the expression of identity, even unconscious expressions of identity in white people. So, for instance, the Tea Party, you often see, not so much anymore, but back when the Tea Party was being discussed all the time, the left-wing Jewish media openly pathologized it as being too white. It's a bunch of racist white people expressing their racism. They just don't like having a black president. And, you know, to a certain extent, that is true, that instinctively these white people were expressing their desires for policies that they think would favor themselves. And it just so happened that it was mostly white people that came out, because it was mostly white people that share those ideals and values. And respect for the Constitution and small government and, you know, all of that stuff that makes the conservative wing of the Republicans and the right wing politics be mostly white. But they, most of them, 90 odd percent of them, would deny that it has anything to do with race, that it's that race is important to them at all, that they've got lists of black Republicans on their computers that they've been gathering because they just love black commentators so much and want to prove that they're not racist by loving all these black Republicans. It's bizarre, the denial that they're in. But it's no wonder that they are, because the media is full of the message that they shouldn't feel that race is important. They should, you know, have a country that's set up by that's open to everybody and doesn't discriminate based on race or religion or anything else. And even to, you know, they try to stick to their guns about laws and being law abiding, and that doesn't fly either. That ultimately is being pathologized and demonized as racist too, simply because of the disparate impact that it has, that it's mostly Mexicans that are illegal immigrants. And that's just a simple fact. And anyway, a lot of this is facilitated by the fact that that Jews are dishonest. They simply lie. They lie about who they are. They lie about what they want. Their arguments are dishonest. And I think identity is important. It's obvious from this that identity is important to them, and that race is important, especially to the anti-racists. Even if you don't want to talk about race, they are going to hit you over the head with it all the time, so you can't avoid it. And I think race and identity explains more than left and right or this rhetoric about America that they're always going on about. So I think it's a good idea to seek out who are the Jews? Who is a Jew? You know, Google it. Go look them up. Don't feel embarrassed to do that. It's important. And then once you find out who's a Jew, call them out on it. Tear off their mask. They hate it, and it's probably the most effective thing that we can do.